Welcome to Sense and Sustainability, your podcast channel for sustainable procurement. We hope you like what you hear. Please go to www.iso2400.org for more information, learning resources, tools, and much more.
Hello and welcome to Sense and Sustainability. It's my pleasure to introduce David Baggs from Australia. And when David and I had a conversation before we did this recording, we found that actually we've got quite a series of common backgrounds, particularly our mutual interest in the Olympics, David in Sydney and mine in London. So I really do hope that you enjoy listening to David, understanding what he can do and understanding what our joint experience in the Olympic Games has given us in terms of taking forward the sustainability agenda in our supply chains. So today it's my pleasure to welcome David Baggs from Australia in our ever-growing series of podcasts around sustainable procurement. So welcome, David, and would you like just to tell us a bit about your background and how you came to be involved in sustainability?
Yeah, thanks, Shane. Well, look, professionally I'm an architect. When I was a student, I read the Club of Rome's Limits to Growth and decided that was sort of going to be in about 1974, and that was going to really be the direction I wanted to head professionally. My father was also an architect and landscape architect and a senior lecturer at University of New South Wales. And he, in about 1979, started doing research on earth-covered and integrated buildings, and I liked the idea of that. And then, you know, long story short, moved into doing earth-covered buildings, realized they needed to be passive solar, found out about what that was about, got into energy efficiency, and because of the direction from the Club of Rome and climate change, you know, got involved in policy. And a few years later, my sister, we came down ill and we started looking at low chemical buildings for her. Because of her chronic fatigue, and then started doing some work for clients in that area. Got into doing some straw bale and some earth wall. And then in 1995, the Australian Olympic Coordination Authority put out this ad for this thing called an ecologically sustainable development consultant. And I looked at the list of what this person, this, you know, a mythical person at the time, was meant to be able to do. And I was like, oh, I can do that. Oh, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I'm not just an architect. I'm an ecologically sustainable development consultant. You know, again, long story short, I ended up being the sustainability, materials, energy, life cycle impact, and even audit consultant on 10 of the Sydney 2000 Olympic Games venues. Got involved with a fair bit of energy efficiency policy at state and local and federal government levels, and in 2010 was responsible for implementing the SDDAMA green building rating system for the Emirate of Abu Dhabi. And in 2003, my then business partner Mary Lou Kelly said to me, what are you doing with all this work you did for the Olympics? It's too important to be sitting on our shelves, you know, in the practice. Why don't we get it out? At that time, we started doing that. The University of RMIT University in Melbourne heard what we were doing and said, would you like to partner? We jointly launched this service called EcoSpecifier, which was a database of eco-preferred products where we'd done a health and toxicity scan to make sure that they were non-toxic, verified their environmental claims, and we launched that and ran that for 6 or 7 years, at which point the market kept saying to us, are you certifiers? We kept saying, well, we're not, no, we're verifiers. And you know, we got asked that question so many times, started asking, why are you asking? And the answer was, well, you know, we don't like what's in the market at the moment, we'd like an alternative. And so Green Tag was born in 2010 as certification authority. And then fast forward a few years and we decided we were going to be doing EPDs, became an EPD program operator. And just actually recently we've been recognized as a full member of the Eco EPD platform in Europe. So, and you know, globally. So that's been a big step forward for us. So that's really the, you know, a potted history. and we've got a great team now and global recognitions within Green Tag. So it's been a real ride.
Certainly has. That's a very short summary of what's obviously a fascinating story. Yeah, if we can just pick a few things out of that, because as we discussed when we met earlier in the week, we have a common interest in Olympics. I chaired the Independent Commission for a Sustainable London 2012. And when I looked Indeed. Around at sustainability performance of previous Olympics, really I picked two that had a story to tell. Environmentally, one was Sydney, and I guess from a point of view of social and legacy was Barcelona, because they did some fantastic things with the waterfront there and regenerated what was a very poor and deprived area of the city. And I know from my visits to the former Olympic site in Sydney, there's a very similar story around regeneration. How did that feel? I mean, when I was doing it from 2005 through to 2012, because there's a very long run-up period to an Olympics, it felt quite pioneering and quite new, and some of the things that I was talking about, people thought I was mad. How did that feel for you? Because obviously you're going back a bit further into Sydney. What you were doing was quite unusual. Did you meet resistance to what you were trying to do?
Well, the original concept for a Green Games was originally a proposal put forward by Greenpeace Australia, and they created and helped conceive the bid. So it had that momentum behind it when we came on board. The benefit, I guess, for me was the group that had won the bid brought me on as their to-do person. That was a company called Manitas Roberts. It doesn't exist anymore, but it's been morphed into a bigger consultancy. But ultimately, I was brought in as the do person. And, you know, we were brought in day one, pre-bid, pre-tender, to strategize the bid. And, you know, we had a framework to go from, but, you know, I also had already at that point, you know, a life, 20 years of experience in sustainability and a deep understanding of what was involved. So, you know, we're able to strategize the bid and then win the bid. So that was exciting in itself. But then to actually get the job of doing the implementation and for the team on board to be aware that I was going to be doing the audits and government reporting and to the NGOs at the end of the process, and to be given the job of doing the liaison with those government instrumentalities and NGOs along the way, it gave a huge amount of leverage. And therefore, you know, we were able to achieve a lot. We actually, you know, had a budget to actually intervene in the process and make sure if things were going off track, we could bring them back on track. So we had some really big wins, or I had some, you know, really big wins along the way. And you know, the buildings that came out as a result, you know, were much more successful. You know, for instance, the roof of the Superdome, the multi-use arena, has 200,000 telephone books in insulation, and wow. that was nearly lost. And the fact that I was able to engage the manufacturer to do the testing that was necessary and get it on board, it ultimately saved them 6 weeks construction time and ended up in a lifetime license that extended their noise license by 2 hours a day. So wow. The cost benefits to that project were enormous, and it made it a much simpler construction process.
Yeah, it is about leverage, isn't it? I, in my experience, I was reporting directly to the Mayor of London and to the Olympics Minister, and independently in public. And you're right, it gives you a lot of leverage. And I had a similar story with the Aquatic Centre in London, where they were going to put 2 megawatts of HFC cooling into the Aquatic Centre. And I said, that no, you know, you just can't do this. You can't call yourselves the Sustainable Games and do this. And I eventually needed to take that to the Mayor of London, because there was nobody in the delivery authority. They'd already designed the building with the wrong sort of cooling. And they said, well, it's going to cost, you know, £2 million or something to put it right. And fortunately, I was in the position of being able to say, well, you know, I don't care. You know, you designed it wrong in the first place. Really not my problem. But that went all the way up the hierarchy in the Olympic Delivery Authority and eventually to the mayor. And then it had to be the mayor that actually instructed them to put it right, because clearly You at that time, HFCs were a real thing in terms of the global warming potential, and you just couldn't do it. So, yeah, as you say, having that leverage to be able to be respected, I guess, for your opinion is very, very important.
Yeah, well, I mean, HFCs were an issue even, in Sydney because the commitment had been no HFCs. And in the end, I mean, I did a full-blown life cycle analysis on all of the impacts of all of the different materials and was able to show that if we used a leak detection and drawdown technology, that the impact of those, because of the danger of the alternatives, the hydrocarbons or ammonia or whatever, the alternatives are available at the time, the risk profile was too high. So ultimately, it came down to me. I got a call one day saying, David, the minister for the Olympics is in Luzerne and he needs a media release as to why we went with the HFCs in the multi-use arena. And anyway, I was able to do some quick research and get on the phone to the manufacturer of asthma puffers because I was aware at the time they used R12 still, and basically said, look, I think you've got this much amount of R12 in your asthma puffers. Tell me I'm wrong. They refused. I said, okay, well, I think it's X amount. And they said, oh, no, it's not that much, and gave me the number. So I
Yeah.
was absolutely able to, issue a draft to the minister that was used the following day that basically said the impact of the air conditioning system for the multi-use arena is no more than a single family's asthma puffers per year. And it, completely,
Yeah.
completely diffused the industry, the matter. It was a great set of experiences. You talk about leverage. I mean, as a single practice architect in the late 80s, I had these, as I mentioned, I had clients who were chemically sensitive, and so I would ask this particular plasterboard manufacturer, can you tell me what materials your plasters are made of? Because I've got these chemically sensitive people, and I need to know that it's healthy. And it's like, no, so that's sorry, take a running jump. Basically, that's
Yeah.
commercially confident material. Sitting, interestingly, fast forward a couple of years, sitting in at the Olympics table, that same manufacturer is sitting there saying, looking to be involved with the project. I said, look, if you're going to be involved with the project, you're going to have to tell us what's in your plasters and cements. And they went, what would you like to know, Mr. Baggs? So that's when I realized that it was all about leverage.
Absolutely, yeah. That's we had a similar experience when there was a plan originally to build a wind turbine on the Olympic Park, and they during that period a blade actually dropped off of a turbine in the UK in cold weather. There was a big massive failure, and then it was like, well, you can't have that in the Olympic Park. It's just not going to happen. And the turbine was cancelled, and that was an interesting experience because talking about relationships with the NGOs and all of that stuff. And I met with all of the big NGOs very regularly. Listened to the case for cancelling the wind turbine, which is quite controversial because people say, oh, big wind turbine, fantastic. And I supported that, and I was able to explain to the likes of Greenpeace why, on health and safety grounds, you really can't have a 2 MW wind turbine in the middle of your Olympic Park. It's just not, given the safety record at the time of these turbines. But I'd still held them to their commitment to their energy and emissions targets. And when that all came out in the press, the NGOs actually just referred everybody to me. So Greenpeace didn't say anything, Friends of the Earth didn't say anything. It's like, no, okay, we've spoken to the commission, because they recognized that I was truly independent. So I was then able to go back and explain to it was Mayor Boris Johnson at the time, which was
Right.
quite a challenging person to deal with.
Even
And it's just
more
like,
well done.
yeah, it's like, no, it's going to be okay, Boris. It's going to be okay. Yeah, I had to speak in very political terms. So, but I think from what I've seen, London, Sydney, Barcelona have certainly taken the agenda forward. And from my experience, it certainly kind of kick-started the whole idea of sustainable construction in the UK for sure.
And likewise in Australia. And the thing that was good about the way Sydney was planned is the legacy. And basically, even the projects that had to be reduced in scale after the event all had legacy outcomes for those deconstructed components. And the whole of Sydney Park is still, developing and becoming a much more, a vibrant hub, even, so 20 plus years later. The whole suburb of Newington, is a very now, quite a high-end community because it was all done so well, all with, high-level energy efficiency and healthy materials and a very good holistic outcome. And in fact, the influence of that development has taken over that whole peninsula, and ended, in the development of a great number of other developments.
It's very similar in London. It's still a work in progress, though. There's still more to be done in terms of the sort of social and economic legacy. It's fascinating. So we didn't really come on this call intending to talk about the Olympics, but it seemed like a good opportunity to start.
Thank you for listening to our podcast on Sense and Sustainability. Please listen out for more episodes. For more information, learning resources, tools, and much more content on sustainable procurement, go to www.iso2400.org.